If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.
And I try to go hard at every basket and dunk all the balls. One.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where we are officially in the dog days of summer for the NBA and the Lakers, left to our psychotic Lakers thirsty selves overanalyzing the number of rotational spins per millisecond Julius Randle has added to his jump shot release this offseason in random Team USA scrimmage videos. So Tommy, how's your rotational spins per millisecond doing this summer, whatever that means?
How's mine personally doing? I think it's okay. Hopefully Randle's is doing better than mine.
Good to know, man. Me too. My rotational spins per millisecond are doing amazing this summer. Unfortunately, kind of want for news, any news we can get right now, but we'll do our best for those who are listening out there to try and make summer less boring. But yeah, before we get started, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes, because the more you rate and review us, that's how many more quote-unquote morning after pics of shirtless Zubats in bed with his girlfriend wearing his Lakers jersey by his side that we'll get this season. I was thinking we need more of those pics until we get the entire Lakers jersey collection fulfilled. Like, we need to see his girlfriend wearing, like, Hollywood Knights jersey and then, like, the old school Minneapolis classic jersey. And he just
I thought you were going to say that Larry Nance should take, like a mock photo of him and his girlfriend. Like in a similar position, and then Randle should take one of him and his fiance.
Dude, that's an even better idea. They should keep going back and forth until they fulfill the entire Lakers montage of jerseys. That would be amazing. So if you guys want to see that happen, to see those morning after bedside pics of Zubats and then Nance and then Zubats, please rate and review, because it will happen. So yeah, once again, that's on iTunes. Rate and review us. If you're using the iTunes podcast app, it's really easy. If you're using it on your phone and you're listening to this on your phone somehow, you can easily just pull us up on that app and rate us 5 stars. And then if you want to write something bad, go ahead and write something bad and talk about how you hate us and hate our voices and whatnot. Just give us 5 stars. So yeah, with that said, let's just go straight into some topics that we haven't really touched upon, but they've been floating around Lakers Nation, Lakers Land, and now that we have time to talk about them because the games are finally done. So let's start with, you know, obviously we're going to get into some Team USA talk and what Ingram, Randle, D'Angelo have been doing, and there's a lot of great content that has come out in the last 3 days, but we'll kind of reserve that for the end. But I thought we'd start with, you know, somehow the Lakers still have cap space, and you know, free agency is essentially done for everybody, including the Lakers, but I thought we'd kind of just wrap up and address some remaining questions that are out there involving the Lakers. So we actually have around 12 million to 13 million depending on if Swaggy gets waived. Basketball Insiders has it as 13.6 million in cap space left, with the possibility of stretching Nick Young. Mm-hmm. But obviously the Lakers haven't signed Brandon Ingram yet. They haven't signed Tariq Black yet. They haven't signed Marcelo Huertas yet. Presumably because they were going to use all of their cap space first and then sign those guys once they're over the cap or reach the cap. I think you and I are both in agreement that they're likely not going to sign any more guys, that and that the reason why they're keeping that cap space open and they haven't signed Brandon Ingram or any of those guys yet is just in case a trade were to make itself available, mm-hmm. and also just in case some random person wants to sign for like 1 year. But most likely it's for in a trade scenario. So I guess, what are your thoughts on why the Lakers have kept this cap space available? And do you foresee a move coming in the next week or two?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with everything you just said. And I think I focus more on the trade aspect of it. I don't think they're saving this money to go after another free agent. There's no free agent left, you know, who's going to, first of all, we're not going to give a multi-year deal to anyone. And second of all, if we get in a 1 year overpay situation, it's like, we either are going to get the guy or we don't. You know what I mean? It's not like $1 million is going to make or $2 million is going to make a difference, because we're either going to get him or the 76ers, who have much more, a team who has much more cap space than us, is going to even overpay more than us. So I don't think it's that. I think it's more, you know, let's say hypothetically some sort of weird trade comes along and we get a good player, like a good young prospect that we're interested in for whatever reason, and they want us to take on, you know, one or two expiring contracts so that they don't have to pay tax. I mean, I guess it would most likely wouldn't be two, but let's say they, a young player and one expiring contract, so the team doesn't have to pay tax. In that case, it helps to have not only a little bit extra money, but maximum roster flexibility. So we don't have to waive anyone or do anything before the, you know, the trade. So we could just get the guy, maybe waive the guy then, and then do all our signings or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I don't really know, but that's just my hunch.
Yeah, and to be clear, that $12 million that we still have open, that's going to be carried over to next year, because next year the cap jumps to around $8 million more.
Yes.
And we pretty much need every single dollar, we can get. Every dollar bills we can get to maintain at least one max slot. And that's not even just a Russell Westbrook thing, but it would presumably be for a guy of Russell Westbrook's caliber, who next year I think his max would be under a $102 million cap, $29 million, right? Something along those lines.
Yeah.
So right now, I think the Lakers, without doing any moves, would have in that vicinity of money. And we learned, like, yesterday that Jordan Clarkson, Luau Deng, and Mozgov's contracts all go down in summer 2017. So they all go down by about $500K to $1 million. So that frees up about $2.5 to $3 million for the
Lakers.
Pretty
nice, man.
Yeah, and I think the reason why Mitch did that, and that's the only time that their salaries drop, by the way, it goes back up in the third year. So you would have to assume that this was done intentionally. Obviously, it's not a precursor to some big move, because you're only saving like 2.5 mil, right? But what it does do, I think, is that it allows Mitch to say we have a max slot no matter what, without making any additional moves, like having to trade Lou Will the last second, you know, et cetera, because I think if they hadn't made that declining move, they'd still be a little bit short of that one max slot. But because they've done this and Clarkson, Mozgov, and Deng's salaries go down and descend, I think they don't really have to do anything but keep this $12 million that they have right now and just carry it over. Or if they sign someone, it would just be a one-year deal and they'd have that slot already. So I think that's why they intentionally made it go down. And I guess some people would say, like, but why? Who are we going to get in 2017 anyway, right?
Yeah.
I guess how would you answer that question for people? It's like, why would it be intentionally 2017 when we've already stonewalled off ourselves for 2018 and 19 as well?
So 2017 is like a huge summer, right? I mean, you might ask yourself very reasonably, okay, well, who are we going to get? We didn't get anyone the last 3 years. We didn't get anyone this year. Like, who's going to come here? Look, we've sort of turned a corner here. Kobe's gone. It's a new era. We have all these young guys that are continuing to develop. 2017 is a huge summer for free agents like Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook. A lot of these guys, if you look at the list, it's a way more powerful class than 2016. And if you go down the line, it's a lot of those guys you could pretty much off the bat eliminate as guys who aren't going to come here. And I might even put Westbrook in that category, although everyone's linking him to LA because he's from here. But, you know, Chris Paul's not going to come here because he's going to go championship hunting. But, you know, you never know what's going to happen. And to save one max slot, I think is pretty wise, given that there's nobody left really who's worth signing to a multi-year deal.
And then I think the other thing is a significant amount of less teams will have max space open next year.
Oh, and of course,
and
that too, yeah.
And so the Lakers would be one of the few teams, unlike this year where everybody had
literally
max
every
space
team
with,
except for like four, right?
Yeah, so it's an advantage for them to, you know, have that max space over for 2017. And let's say they strike out again, then that's fine, you know, because they've already committed fully to this 3 or 4 year rebuild of having the young guys run the show for the most part and just having Deng and Mozgov and other veterans around them, you know. So if they quote unquote strike out in 2017, that's fine, because this was a 3 to 4 year kind of rebuild anyways. And I think they're just making sure to leave all their options open for 2017 just in case. And just even taking Westbrook out of the equation, I think they could go after guys who could fit that Luau Deng kind of build, but help progress and expedite the young guys' maturation a little bit with guys like, let's say, you know, Paul Millsap is an unrestricted free agent. He obviously is an older guy, but wouldn't you think he'd fit really well with Luau Deng and continue to nurture these guys and also help build that competitive spirit? So someone like Paul Millsap, you know, JJ Redick is another guy who I thought would fit perfectly. He's probably going to get paid a lot, but again, with fewer teams with money next year, who knows? Maybe the Lakers could sign a JJ Redick and someone like that would fit perfectly with D'Angelo Russell. Obviously, Serge Ibaka is going to be out there as an unrestricted free agent. Gordon Haywood would be perfect, but again, he's one of those bigger names that we typically end up striking out on. But yeah, there are other guys out there outside of Westbrook that if you have max space open and you know this is going to be a 3 to 4 year rebuild, it would be beneficial to just have that max space open. And if nothing happens, then you punt it again.
Exactly. So. And I think you've also put yourself, I mean, you're sort of alluding to this here, but you've also put yourself in a position to where, like, look, Hayward is probably going to be a max. I don't know if Millsap would be a max, but like most of the guys you just discussed would be max players. But and because everyone's burned their cap space this year, those guys are likely going to stay with their teams or go to contenders who are able to clear for cap space. But there's going to be like, I don't want to say new Deng and Mozgovs, but like at least new Deng type players.
Yes. New Deng
who will emerge and who, like, you know, this year Deng got 18 mil per, but because everybody burned all their cap space, cause everyone's trying to like accelerate to contend right now. There, you know, those types of offers, it's very reasonable to assume that they aren't going to be around next year for those middle tier type guys like Luol Deng. So You put yourself in a position where, look, you go through a year, if you don't get a star again, big deal, because, you know, whatever holes you see in your roster, you could try to plug again with two more mid-sized deals like you did with Deng and Mozgov this year, except hopefully, you know, better than Mozgov, but, you know, that type of player.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, we know that guys like DeMarcus Cousins become free agents in 2018. And if that's the case and the Lakers really do strike out and they weigh things properly, then like I said, they can punt again. So, yeah, I mean, it's just all about keeping your options open and not so much about why are they just leaving this space open for just Westbrook. It's not just about Westbrook here. You know, it's just once again about flexibility. And also 2017, this is now the actual year. I know we've been saying like, oh, if we show promise in 2015-16, then the summer will be able to entice free agents. But this is actually the legitimate year where you can say that 100%, because Byron's gone, new regime in terms of coach. English. I love it. But yeah, Luke Walton's there. You have actual man on the ground in Luau Deng. So you can test all those things out for real in 2017. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out and you just keep going. But it's all about slowly building here. So
yeah. So another thing I was thinking of about why the Lakers might be keeping that extra cap space is because, you know, if they want to, I think they might be targeting, I don't know who, but maybe they're targeting another guy in like a Calderon type deal. And now, of course, they have a little bit more to offer because they have the 2 second round picks that they acquired from Calderon. So they could throw that in as a sweetener to like separate themselves from some of the other teams with cap space. But, you know, we were talking about like, oh, okay, where's Westbrook going? Is he going to be traded? Well, maybe you're right, dude. I mean, you brought some pretty good points and maybe they do have like a, maybe there's buzz around the league that Westbrook is going somewhere. And maybe on one of those potential Westbrook rosters, there's a guy who's expiring who the Lakers like, who they'd be happy to take on for free or for just a second round pick. And that team is going to have to get rid of that guy to clear space for Westbrook. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but that could just be another reason why they're trying to like make sure they're maximizing, you know, the few million, by not signing any of these guys that we were talking about earlier.
In big trades like that, teams always need a third-party facilitator. And you saw that happen with Miami and the Bulls, right? And that's why we were able to get Jose Calderon to help sort out all the cap stuff there, being the third team. So I think that's definitely a possibility and another reason why the Lakers could be keeping that cap space open for a potential trade. It's not, I know people were asking me earlier on Twitter, like, well, who could the Lakers possibly get? I mean, the point is we don't know because we don't know what trades are out there, what trades will materialize from now till the end of August. So I think the Lakers are just keeping all options open. Like, for example, some expiring guys that they may have interest in. I've thrown this guy out every year, but Taj Gibson at $9 million. Presumably the Bulls would want to keep him, but he's an example of an expiring veteran who, if he was became available, the Lakers would be like, yes, we'll take him into our cap space, no problem, and we'll even give you a second round pick to do that. You know what I mean? And then also the Kings have a plethora of guys that they're trying to get rid of. I don't think we take them on, but like Rudy Gay's expiring and, you know, he's there, he's available. They have a The Suns have Tyson Chandler. That I don't think the Lakers would do that. He's not expiring. But there are other guys around the league, like you said, who are expiring and are in that 9 to like 11 mil range that if the Lakers want to take on another flyer in terms of a veteran, that's why you'd keep that cap space open.
So. Yeah, I mean, I was looking at just – here's another name, Amir Johnson, right? He's on the Celtics, right, and he's 1 year expiring. And obviously Oklahoma City has a ton of big men now, so they have no need for that guy. So that would be like one example of like, all right, we'll give you $2 million for Amir Johnson, and Amir Johnson would be a ginormous upgrade at backup center, dude. Like that guy's totally a legitimate backup center, decent rim protector, very solid player, played in Brad Stevens' system, so he's familiar with sort of what we're trying to do with motion and, you know, play calling and, you know, spacing and all this and that. But that's just one example. I mean, God knows, maybe they're like, okay, well, if we know Westbrook is out for 2017, we might even be open to taking a 2-year deal on. But the point is, you want to keep all your space if that's the sort of buzz you're hearing. Which, you know, we don't know. You know, there's so much that like, oh yeah, well, this is gonna happen or this is not gonna. We're not like privy to this stuff. Like, as we all saw with free agency, the first day, all these guys were signed immediately. Like, clearly teams have an idea of what's going on, you know, and like players have an idea of what's going on. And I think it's because the agents are just sort of like, you know, something gets said and they're sending it out to everybody. Oh, just FYI, like this guy's going to sign here. And then every team sort of reacts, you know, so that could be happening here.
Yeah, and I think it's even more essential too, because the Lakers, presumably, if they waive Swaggy like we anticipate them doing, they're going to have like 2 roster slots open. And I think because they weren't able to sign a guy like Brandon Bass back, I think they're still looking to maybe fill one more veteran slot, you know, because I don't think Luau Deng and Mozgov would be enough for them. I mean, it might be, but I think the ideal situation is bringing on another veteran guy, whether that's just a minimum contract and it's more Luau Deng, Jose Calderon. And Mozgov. But I think ideally they would like another veteran presence there. So a guy like Amir Johnson taking him on would, I think, be a great fit on all levels and also fulfill that added mentorship, veteran leadership role. So, yeah, we'll just have to see. Again, it's just about the Lakers keeping all options open and keeping flexibility open, because they have no reason to do anything too quickly because everybody is just waiting around too. So, yeah, we'll see. I guess the last remaining question with the cap and the Lakers team and the roster is, what the hell is Swaggy P still doing on this team, Tommy? What is going on? They can wave him and stretch him whenever they want to. Why is he still on this team?
So Swaggy P, he's going to be waived or stretched or both, right? Or both. So what's going to happen is they have a deadline. The stretch deadline for the upcoming season is August 31st. If they waive Swaggy P before August 31st, he effectively has 2 years on his contract, and those 2 years are stretched over 5 years at a rate at $2.2 million, because he has about $11 million left, right? So 2.2 is $11 million. If you wait until after August 31st, so say you wait until September 1st, and then you waive him, basically he is considered a fully guaranteed contract for the next season, 2016-2017, his full $5.5 million counts. But then his last $5.5 million is stretched over the following 3 years, 1.8 over the following 3 years. So there is a decently strong, and I think like it, given how things have shaken out, right? I mean, barring some weird thing that we would probably know about well in advance of August 31st. It seems at this point likely that, I mean, if I was the Lakers, I would just wait until September 1st and then waive him, because why not pay him the 5.5 that he's owed? You're going to have to pay him the full $11 million in some form or fashion. Okay. So, because it's a guaranteed contract, but why not pay him the 5.5 he's owed for this season? and then after this season, and then like, and then stretch the remaining contract number over over 3 years. And then that way, like, you know, that fifth year that would happen if you waived him right now is eliminated, and you're saving a little bit more cap space. I mean, it's like 400K, but it's still, you know, you're saving a little bit more cap space over the next 3 years. And I think it just makes more sense in all scenarios to go about it that way.
I guess my question is, Swaggy P has a player option for his last year. So how would you stretch him if he hasn't opted in yet? Could you do that?
Yes. I think what happens is when you waive him, that last year automatically becomes guaranteed. I don't know if that's the function, like if that's technically exactly how it happens, but I know that because it's a player option, it's not unguaranteed. Non-guaranteed money is a team option or just a non-guaranteed provision. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
if it's a player option, that's not considered non-guaranteed because the player's in control. So I think what happens is automatically that money becomes guaranteed. And then like to the extent somebody else picks him up, it reduces some of that burden. So if we don't, if we just cut him and don't stretch him, technically he would just count as 5.5 and 5.5 for the next two seasons.
But you get it over with pretty much.
But you get it over with over the next two seasons. But I think that, and I'm pretty sure actually, now that we're talking about it, I don't know actually, this is something that maybe we have to tweet Pincus. I don't know if we would have to stretch that final year like immediately, or if we can wait until next summer 2017 until August 31st, 2017 to stretch the second year. Does that make sense? Because
yeah,
if we can just do that, then we could do the same thing, right? We can wait and see, okay, are we going to get Westbrook or a top free agent, any top mid-tier free agents or whatever? And if the answer is no again, like this year, then maybe we just don't stretch him and we just get it over with. So I don't know, but those are, for now, it seems like those are the two major options. And so I would be pretty surprised if they waived him before August 31st, but it's like so widely reported at this point that they're going to waive him. So it's just a matter of waiting at this point.
I guess my question is, after August 31st, I think that's the deadline to stretch, right? For at least this year.
August 31st is the deadline for this year. Yeah.
So after August 31st, then he's guaranteed for this entire 2016-17 year, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
So then you're proposing that they would stretch him or after August 31st, or they just waive him?
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, like, if you waive him after August 31st, a stretch is, like, what follows a waiver. They're, like, they go hand in hand, right? Like,
oh, really?
Stretching is what you do to a contract when a guy is being waived. But we just say stretching because it's like a type of waiving, right? So it's like you're waiving the guy, but like that money's guaranteed. So if we waive him before August 31st, we would have to stretch the next 2 years. But the stretching deadline is August 31st, right? So if we waive him before August 31st, we would have to stretch the next 2 years over 5 years. But if we wait until after August 31st, next year is fully guaranteed at 5.5, and we only have to stretch the remaining second year over 3 years. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So like for 2016 summer, we'd still have Nick Young's, or 2017 summer, we'd still have Nick Young's $5 million on the books, but we'd stretch out his last contract.
For 2016-17, during the season, Nick Young's contract on the books, and then as of 2017 summer, his cap hit would only be 1.8, and that 1.8 would go over the next 3 years to make up that extra 5.5 that we owe him, right?
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure, not to get too bogged down in all the numbers trying to follow this crazy complicated stuff. I mean, that's pretty much what the Lakers are dealing with. And I guess the more realistic question here is, why are they waiting? And I think the simple answer really is they have no reason to waive or do anything before August 31st with regards to Swaggy P. Because one of the options still remaining is also that maybe they're waiting to see if a team will take Swaggy P on for the cost of a second round pick. Like if the Lakers attach a second round pick to Swaggy, some team might be like, okay, we'll take Swaggy on and we'll waive him ourselves. We just want that second round pick, you know? I think that could be an option. That's probably unlikely, but honestly, until August 31st hits, one way or another, there's no reason for the Lakers to waive him or stretch him because they know they're going to do it in one form or another. So would you agree that that's pretty much why nothing has happened?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So, I mean, like, sorry if they got a little too complicated. Obviously, do all your homework yourself as well and, like, verify all that information. But for the most part, the Lakers are going to waive or stretch Swaggy P. And from all reports and indications, that's what's going to happen. It's just a matter of time and dealing with that deadline of August 31st, weighing all your options and then all the other cap machinations you can do with Swaggy. So I fully expect him to not be on our team and have that roster spot open for the beginning of training camp. So yeah, with that said, that'll end pretty much all the cap talk and remaining like free agency stuff that the Lakers have going on. And we'll just shift very naturally into Russell Westbrook talk because that also has a lot to do with summer 2017. I can't believe we're already talking about summer 2017, but that's what we got to do. So Russell Westbrook is the subject of the day and of the summer around the NBA, not just Lakers-wise. OKC's obviously got to make a decision here because obviously Kevin Durant left. Sam Presti traded Serge Ibaka for Oladipo and Sabonis. And they're at a kind of a crossroads here in OKC. Presumably one of the reasons they renounced their rights to Dion Waiters was to free up cap space to sign Westbrook to an extension, kind of the same way that Houston did with Harden this offseason. But that's still a question that remains up in the air, because what will happen from now till training camp is Sam Presti, OKC's GM, will probably offer him an extension. And if Westbrook turns that down, Presti will likely have to trade Westbrook. I guess, what's your opinions on how likely it is they trade Westbrook versus not trading him, et cetera, et cetera? Obviously, all of this is dependent on whether or not he accepts an extension or even soft commits to staying to OKC.
Yeah, so I don't think he's going to sign an extension or even soft commit to staying. I think this is a way more difficult question than I think it seems superficially. And the reason it's difficult is because first of all, let's just put down as like a baseline that he's not going to commit, right? And for, just for the sake of argument, maybe you have a good argument that he would, but I'm just going to say that, okay, no, he's not. So if he's not going to commit, if you're Sam Presti, what do you do, right? Because knowing that he's not going to commit to you and most likely not going to commit to anyone else, unless you're like, you know, I don't know, the Spurs, I don't know, I can't think of who you would commit to. If you're Sam Presti, do you just keep him for 1 year, try to make the playoffs, try to, you know, develop Oladipo and Steven Adams some more and maybe Sabonis or whoever you're, you know, going to try to move forward with, and then just let him walk, like knowing he's going to walk, or, you know, try to convince him to stay like you did with KD, although it's like even less likely than KD was. But or do you just like say, hey, look, dude, we have our 2017 pick. 2017 is supposed to be a loaded draft. There's supposed to be many potential superstars in it. I mean, I know nothing about it, but that's what people are saying. And if we trade Westbrook in the West, we're going to be a horrible team, right? I mean, they're not going to be like trash like I was going to say us, but that's a little bit too pessimistic. They're not like complete garbage, but they're for sure not going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're going to be a lotto team if they trade Westbrook. So if I'm Sam Presti, I guess the thing I'm thinking is, do I just trade Westbrook to anyone like for anything? Like let's just put it out there. Westbrook is available. Give me your best offer. I'm telling you right off the bat, he's not going to sign an extension with you or at least commit to it. What's the best you can give me? And just get rid of him for anything, like one first round pick or, you know, two assets or, you know, whatever you can get for him. Because like whatever minimums teams are giving, the best you can get of the garbage offers. And then go into 2016-17 and just roll with your team and probably end up pretty bad and then nab another top pick in next year's draft. And then, hey, you know what? You have Oladipo, you have Steven Adams, you have Kanter, who maybe you don't keep, but you could trade him for someone good. You have Sabonis, McGarry's not bad, Cameron Payne is still there, lingering. And then you add like a potential superstar draft pick to that mix. So I can see both ways, but I guess I got a little bit off topic there, but to answer your first question, I mean, I don't think I don't think it's very likely at all that Sam Presti trades him. But if he doesn't trade him before the season starts, he's not going to trade him at like 100% for sure, because at the trade deadline, you're really not going to get anything for him.
Yeah, I mean, to go off of that, under the premise that Westbrook does not sign an extension, which is likely, I think Sam Presti has to do everything in his power to trade Westbrook. And judging by his history, he's going to do exactly that before the season starts. This was the same guy who traded away Harden and got those assets, which is now pretty much just Steven Adams, before his year was even up, because Harden still had a full year with the OKC left and he could still become a restricted free agent with them. But he ended up trading him away anyways. And this is a guy who traded Reggie Jackson. He also traded away Serge Ibaka before his year was up too. So he's a guy who does trades and makes these moves before they actually occur, in preparation for them, these guys potentially walking away and them losing out on getting nothing in return, pretty much. So in this scenario, after having seen Kevin Durant walk and them getting nothing in return, I think the pressure is even more on him to make a move. And what's funny is that he's set his team up pretty well to be a pretty good rebuilding on the fly team. You know, they already have Campaign, who they drafted a year ago. He's pretty good if he actually got a starting spot. And then he traded for Oladipo and Sabonis this year. And they got Mitch McGarry, like you said, and Steven Adams. So even just having Steven Adams, Oladipo, and Campaign as a core is pretty good.
Considering you left Westbrook, Ibaka, and Kevin Durant, that's really not a bad idea.
Yeah, and the fact that you'd get whatever assets you can get for Westbrook, then you'd add that to the core as well, and then you include your own 2017 pick, which will likely be a lottery pick. I mean, there's your trust the process OKC part two, you know what I mean? So I think Westbrook is not going to be a Thunder by the start of the season. The only problem is, like you said, this is not an easy question to answer, because knowing that you have to trade this guy, what do you do? Because the problem is, any team trading for Westbrook will definitely want commitments, just like OKC does. And they're not going to get it, so what are they going to do? And in my opinion, there are only two, maybe three teams I can think of that would risk trading for Westbrook without an extension.
Yeah.
And those three teams, in my opinion, are the two LA teams, Lakers and the Clippers, right? Because it's both LA. The Lakers are in a tougher spot because they would have to gut their entire team. Clippers, you know, Chris Paul is going to be, this is his expiring year. I don't know what they do, what they could move, but they could potentially trade for Westbrook without any commitments, knowing that he'd probably want to stay in LA. And then the other team outside of Lakers and Clippers would be the Celtics, yep, because they have a ton of assets that they can trade without messing around too much with their initial core, and having Horford there as a linchpin for their roster. And then obviously because they have Brad Stevens and their culture there. So yeah. I think they bank on that to convince Westbrook, hey, have a great playoff run with us. We're likely going to be the number two best team in the East.
Yeah, dude. And if I was the Celtics, I would seriously consider, as I'm saying, this is a difficult question. And I think Sam Presti is in a bad spot, because no matter what he does, he's going to get flack for it. But if I was him, and I don't know if this is even a realistic offer on Boston's end, if they offered me just the Brooklyn pick, I know they would have to put out contracts there to, you know, I don't know how much under the cap they are still, if at all, but they would probably have to put in some contracts to even it out a little bit. But if I just put in, if he was offering just the Brooklyn pick, Danny Ainge, I would do it, because you potentially, in that scenario, not only are you losing Westbrook, but you're getting no one back. And then you now have Brooklyn's pick, which is going to be a top three pick, like almost for certain. And then your own pick is probably going to be in the top 8 to 5, you know, 5 to 8 range. So in a loaded 2017 draft, you have to almost consider your own pick at that point an asset, because if you don't trade Westbrook, you're going to make the playoffs. And you know, maybe that pick is it's not going to be like in the high 20s, but it'll be like probably in the high teens. And jumping 10 or 11 spots in a draft that's this loaded, that in and of itself is almost an asset, you know?
Yeah. So I actually have some breaking news. There's this Twitter account it's one of these, you know, take it with a heavy grain of salt kind of deals, you know, but there's this guy named Adam Joseph. His Twitter handle is at Adam Joseph Sport. So it's not even sports. It's just at Adam Joseph Sport. So I don't know how reliably you can take this guy when it's just sport with no S. But he has sport. Yeah, like sport. He has like 11,000 followers. He writes for like B-ball breakdown.
That's a pretty good amount of followers, actually.
No, yeah, he writes for SB Nation, B-ball breakdown, and apparently some other stuff that would lead you to believe that he's actually in the sports circuit, at least doing some actual coverage. So he has put out a bunch of tweets, and he pretty much just said, you know, I'm just the messenger here, you know, don't attack me. Let me just read some of them. So 3 hours ago, he wrote, per sources, Presti discussed Westbrook deals with several different teams, including the San Antonio Spurs,
I can see that.
The Milwaukee Bucks, the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Boston Celtics, but no middle ground was found. So he said deals included players and picks from Boston and LA. For the Spurs, it was player-centric deal. For the Bucks, they were very keen but backed away without an extension guarantee. He said situation can be looked at a few ways. One, Presti's trying to explore the market. Two, Westbrook's not signing long-term. And three, OKC already knew this, and so did KD. So he's pretty much intimating that KD left now because he already had a feeling that Westbrook wouldn't stay either way. And he wasn't sure if he wanted to be in that position where Westbrook leaves in the summer of 2017 and he's just left in OKC. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You're right.
So that actually makes a lot of sense in terms of why KD ended up leaving. But I think it's more about Golden State. But Adam Joseph also continues and says, the Celtics deal centered around Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, and picks. So I'm assuming it's one of the Brooklyn picks. And then he said, with the Lakers, sources indicated a deal would need to include Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, and picks.
Oh my God.
I don't know what picks means because we don't really have picks
actually, we have no picks to trade at all. I mean, we have one 2021 pick that we can trade. That's it. Yeah. That's the only pick we can literally trade.
So that kind of doesn't make very much sense. But either way, I think they're telling us, you know, this is what it would take. And I don't think the Lakers or Mitch are ready to include Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell. So we can kind of take that off the table. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the news that he's throwing out there. So take it with a grain of salt. You guys can look at his timeline if you want. Once again, that's at Adam Joseph Sport. Shout out to Adam. Got in a lot of pub here. But yeah, you know, so I guess that leads into a question, an important question for us, I guess. Where do you draw the line in terms of, let's say, Presti goes to that extent and says, okay, I'm going to give Westbrook away for pretty much the best offer I can get, knowing that I'm not going to get a lot in return. Where do you draw the line and who would you give up out of the Lakers' core of assets for Westbrook? I think for me, I draw the line pretty low. So yeah. I would give up maybe Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle. Maybe that's it. Maybe Jordan Clarkson and any combo of like Larry Nance, Julius Randle, and Zubats pretty much. And that's it. What about you?
So, I mean, we can't even, the thing that makes this even weirder is like, we can't trade Clarkson until like January. We can't trade Zubats until like December. So assuming those two are off the table, it's like, I'm not trading Ingram. I'll tell you that much. I'm not going to trade D'Angelo. I would pretty much trade Randall and then a 2021 first rounder, whatever, Lou Williams, I don't know, whatever the hell, whatever else they want at that point. But that's what I'm saying. It becomes so weird for the Lakers because they would be foolish to trade either D'Angelo or Ingram, let alone both, in my opinion, unless they know something about D'Angelo. But based on everything we've seen from D'Angelo this summer and based on everything we've seen from him when Team USA practices, and based on where our organization is, forget about D'Angelo is like what he's ultimately going to become. Westbrook is like in a prime position to win right now. You know what I mean? And what are we going to do? Trade for Westbrook? And okay, he's going to go head to head against San Antonio and Golden State for the next 5 years. Like who are we going to add in the next 1 or 2 years? Who's going to make us compete with those two teams? You don't compete with those two teams by like gutting your whole roster, you know, like Golden State drafted Curry, Clay, and Draymond and built around those guys and kept those guys and extended those guys and paid those guys. And like, that's why they're competing right now. You know, they added Kevin Durant on the side. They added over the years Bogut and they added Iguodala as via trades, but their core was built through the draft and you have to build through the draft. It's, I mean, depending on what you're trying to do, it's not always that way, but because of what we're trying to do, I think you have to build through the draft. Like, we don't have an abundance of assets like Boston. If I was Boston, honestly, I don't know if I would trade all those assets that you listed, but I would definitely trade like two of those.
Yeah.
Because they have so many. And let's be honest, Jaylen Brown is not going to be ready. I mean, he might be good. They got trash for that pick. That guy might be good in like 3 or 4 years. He's super raw. If you're gonna trade Jaylen Brown and the Brooklyn pick and, you know, one of your young guards who's not gonna play, like doesn't even play, like Rozier or something, who doesn't even play now and especially isn't gonna play with Westbrook there, they have an abundance of assets to move for Westbrook. And if I was them, I would do it. Because of where we are and we have no draft picks to trade, if we're gonna have to trade D'Angelo or Ingram or both, I think it's absolutely ridiculous, and I think there's no way Mitch is going to do it. I think this is one of these articles that, like, Presti called to test the market, and he, like, asked, and he said, like, I mean, the guy said no middle ground could be found, so I'm pretty sure Presti asked, like, oh, we want Ingram and D'Angelo, and Mitch said, we'll give you Randall and a future pick or something, and they were like, no. You know, so that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's the question if you're Presti. Like, do you take the best of the worst, you know, the best of the garbage, or do you just play it out? Because if you take the best of the garbage, optically it's going to look really bad for you. The media is going to completely trash your ass, but ultimately it might make you a better team, you know, because you're going to tank yourself, so you're going to end up with your own high lotto pick. So I don't know, there's no way I would do that.
Yeah, well, I think the good thing for Presti is that the Celtics, even if they give you their garbage pile of assets, you'll gladly take that because they have so many. They'll be like, okay, we'll give you the Brooklyn pick. Okay, we'll give you Marcus Smart because we have a glut of guards. And okay, you can have Jaylen Brown too. So if he can just get one team, like the Celtics in particular, to say yes, I think that would be good enough for him. So we'll have to see. Obviously, with the Lakers, we're in such a tough spot because we don't have our pick presumably next year, because we're probably going to be around the fifth or sixth worst team, and you're praying to jump into the top three again for a third straight year. And then I think we lose it again in 2019 as well. Yep. So we're in a precarious situation. And then the other fact is, even our fringe guys like Nance and Zubats, they've shown so much promise and improvement that, like you said, like you heard us trying to rationalize, I don't even know if I'd include those guys. You know, it's like, just take one of the two. If you want to just take Zubats, okay, Zubats. But you can't have a combo of Zubats and Randall. That's too much, you know? So I mean, we're already in that stage.
Well, we're in that stage. And like, look, if you're just superficially listening to this and you're like, oh, they're overhyping their own players. No, it's not even that, dude. It's just like, by the time we would be able to field a competitive roster, all of these guys are going to be good. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to be Russell Westbrook good, but getting Russell Westbrook right now and trading two assets for him is so pointless. Like, what if we got Westbrook, but we had to trade even just one of D'Angelo and or Ingram? Would we even make the playoffs next year with that, our roster and Westbrook? I mean, maybe we'd squeak in as like an eighth seed. And then that would assume that Luke, who's a rookie 36-year-old coach, is able to harness a wild Westbrook who, like, I mean, look, I love Westbrook and I would sign him any day of the week, but you're assuming a lot. Like, it's very unlikely. I mean, if I was the Clippers, to be honest, I would offer Blake Griffin. And because I don't know if he's from Oklahoma. I know he went to Oklahoma. So like, look, send him back home, like run with a 2-point guard lineup next season and a small ball four who can, you know, create some space for DeAndre. Just do that, you know, for next year and see how it goes, because clearly they need to break up that big three, in my opinion, and see how your two crazy point guard lineup works. But really, I think if I was really serious, if I was Boston, I would for sure go for it. If you have Westbrook and Horford, and like, you know, the decent surrounding pieces that they have there and coached by Brad Stevens, you would put up a pretty legitimate fight, in my opinion, against the Cavaliers. You probably wouldn't beat the Cavaliers, but in your first year together, but you would put up a legitimate fight enough so that Westbrook would probably say, you know, if I stay here on this team in the East, like God knows how many more years LeBron's going to be in Cleveland, I can probably get to the finals at least one or two times.
Yeah, and it honestly, it benefits Westbrook more to go East or get traded to a team in the East. Even if he was a free agent, I feel like he'd probably look to teams in the East first to sign with, just because it's pointless out here in the West with the Warriors and Durant pretty much. So yeah, the timelines just don't line up, not only for the Lakers, but also for Westbrook, because you're also putting on that risk of taking him on, and then you only have him for that year, and he's like, wow, Luau Deng and Mozgov and maybe Jordan Clarkson and Randall are my supporting cast. What the hell am I going to do with this team? And then by summer, he's like, let me see if there's any other teams out there that can take my services on and I can do better with and pretty much contend faster and easier with. So the other thing is, like you said, Westbrook's a great player. I personally think that to take on a guy like Westbrook, and you alluded to it a little bit, talking about can Luke harness a guy like him?
Yeah.
When you take on a guy like Westbrook, you're pretty much changing your entire philosophy and entire system, because he's a very ball dominant guy, pretty much 100% usage guy. And you saw it with a guy like Kevin Durant, you know, he was number two to Westbrook pretty much.
Yeah.
And when you take on a guy like that, not to say that Luke wouldn't be able to work with it, but it's totally against what Luke is trying to implement in terms of a motion offense, motion system, where you have more than two or three guys who can play make pretty much. It would become, okay, Luke, it's Westbrook system pretty much, the Kobe system, figure out how to harness this. And I don't know if that's the most beneficial thing, especially if you're trying to do this fresh organics properly with the Lakers. I think all in all, it doesn't make sense for the Lakers to go after Westbrook now. It's in their best interest to just wait it out. And if they don't get Westbrook, they don't get Westbrook. And in 2017, like we said, they can go after some fringe guys that can help the young guys continue to develop, whether that's Paul Millsap, J.J. Redick. Nerlens Noel is a restricted free agent. There are other guys out there that fit the Lakers' timeline better, whether that's signing a younger guy with upside or, like I said, signing another Luau Deng type dude. So
And the thing about that rumor is, like, it really makes sense. But the sad part is all of those, the reason, like, I think all of those offers were probably one-sided is because all of those teams can sign Westbrook outright next summer. Like, the Spurs might have to move some pieces around, but they can do it. And that the Spurs are actually a team that have been linked to Westbrook for a while, because he knows Pop from Team USA stuff. Mm-hmm. And in the past, and you know, that people are saying, like, if he wants to contend against Golden State, that's his best chance, is to play on a Pop coach team. So Boston can also sign him outright. The Clippers can actually sign him outright. They will have, because Blake and Chris Paul become free agents next summer. So technically the Clippers can sign two max guys. So they could pitch like, okay, Westbrook, will sign you and Blake, and we'll go with you, Blake, and DeAndre. Yeah. So I just don't, it's going to be really weird to see what Presti does. I think if he does trade Westbrook, unless Boston like antes up and tries to make a run this year at a championship, it's very unlikely Westbrook gets traded.
All right. I think it's very likely he's going to be traded. I think Presti has to do something. And that, like you said, might take the best of the worst offer. And right now it's looking like the Celtics. And I think this is what that guy is pretty much intimating as well. He says right now, because the Lakers aren't going to give up Brandon Ingram and D'Angelo, Boston is probably the most likely destination. So we'll see what happens. You know, Sam Presti has a very tough decision on his hands. Judging by his history, he's never one to test the waters and be like, okay, Westbrook hasn't committed, let's just see how this year goes. Because like you said, his leverage lessens by the day. And if he thinks he can find a better deal come the trade deadline mid-season, that's not going to happen, you know? At that point, he can probably get a first-round pick back and that's it. Because everybody knows he's going to be bargaining from a lower position of leverage. So I think he's going to have to do something if Westbrook doesn't re-sign. But there's still some time. We'll see.
Yeah.
With that said, let's close this show out with some Lakers news on our actual young core, who we won't be trading. Hey. So Brandon Ingram, Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, they're actually all learning right now from all of these superstar-type dudes, superstar-type veterans with Team USA under Greg Popovich. Is Mike Krzyzewski there as well?
Yes.
He is, right? Yeah, so I mean, all those guys.
I randomly saw Luke there too. I don't know, he was just hanging out. I mean, he's not coaching them, but he was just hanging out there.
So even Luke is getting developmental time with Mike Krzyzewski and Pop. Like, everybody's getting in on the development stuff and learning from these great mentors with high prestige and all this stuff. So what have you been seeing from Team USA that you've liked? Alan and I, in our last podcast, talked about how invaluable this experience is for them. But we understated it now that we're seeing all these headlines about how the guys are really just really buying in, and then also really taking time out to ask questions to the other guys. Like, we've seen D'Angelo talking to Carmelo Anthony on the bench, seeing Julius Randle talk to Boogie Cousins. I don't know if we want that to happen, but, you know, he's actually asking actual tangible advice and then reaching out to Greg Popovich and the other coaches. I just like that the guys are taking initiative outside of just being a part of the Team USA Select scrimmages. So what have you seen that you've liked in the last few days or so?
Well, I think this is just a really good opportunity for these guys to advertise themselves to the NBA. You know, I think for a long time, just as an example, I asked myself, you know, oh, why would anybody ever do, like, for example, the slam dunk contest? Like, it seems like there's no upside, right? Like, you can either only embarrass yourself or get hurt or, you know, with something like that. But agents still want their clients in the slam dunk contest, and they even have these like campaigns like let Shannon dunk or whatever that Shannon Brown one was, like, because the reason is when you're in the spotlight like that, you get so much publicity and you get so much notoriety around the league just by making people aware of who you are. And for a team like us, where we're so many young guys, like, we, the only veterans we have who are like respected around the league are like Deng, and to a lesser extent, Mozgov has been around not quite as long as Deng. Lou Williams, I don't know if he's really respected around the league, but so like pretty much Deng, right? And then everyone else is like, okay, there's an 18-year-old, there's a 20-year-old, there's a 21-year-old. You know, we have a couple 22-year-olds. Like, okay, I don't know who any of these kids are. And this is a good way for people to like look at us and be like, hey, you know what, this kid, D'Angelo, he's 20, but hey, man, he could play. Like, oh shoot, Brandon Ingram's 18. That's insane. Like, but he could play, you know? So yeah. It's nice to have them get that exposure. It's also really nice for developmental purposes, like you've said, and just to practice against guys they're not familiar with. Because, you know, you're working out all summer, you're practicing against guys you know, most likely your friends, you know, you're working out during training camp and you're practicing against your teammates. It's kind of cool to be able to practice for like a week or however long this is going against a bunch of NBA all-stars who are like a mishmash of players from different teams and like a mishmash of future all-stars, you know, young guys from different teams. And you just get to work against all of them for a week. And I think that's a really good experience. They get to see how like these NBA veteran all-star type players like work. And, you know, a lot of these guys seem like they're pretty good teachers. And like, you don't really have a lot of Kobe type personalities, the guys who are going to yell at you and like talk trash and stuff. I mean, maybe Melo talks a little trash on the floor, but yeah. I think it's a really good experience for all of them. And I'm really happy with what I've seen. They all look great in the clips.
Yeah, for sure. And for a guy like D'Angelo, you know, who's gotten a lot of bad and sometimes unfair pub from the press and the media, just like bashing on him and stuff, the best way to dispel those rumors and like unfair criticisms and perceptions of you around the league is by getting into a program like this and just showing up and showing your, not only your peers, but these high prestige type coaches and veteran superstars that, hey, I'm a guy who works hard and takes things seriously. Like, don't listen to what the media overblows regarding the Swaggy P stuff and my immaturity. I think this is like perfect for him. The best way to dispel all those rumors and crap is to just show up, work hard, be a great listener, and show that you can be a very coachable dude. And from all indications, like, it seems like he's doing just that, you know? Guys are taking him under his wing. He's listening. He's running the floor well as a great floor general for Team USA Select. So I'm glad that he's getting this time to assimilate himself into his peer group as well, because largely the guys that he's playing with in Team USA Select, those are largely the free agents that we're going to be going after, that we have a more realistic chance of going after, not like Westbrook, because those guys are out of our timeline. But the guys that D'Angelo and Randle and Ingram are playing with right now, those are the future superstars that we're going to be looking towards. And if they can build chemistry with these guys right now, and dispel that notion that I'm a terrible teammate and everybody hates me, these guys are going to remember that. They're going to remember their time when they played with D'Angelo and Team USA, you know? So I think it's important on so many levels for this guy. And then outside of that, I think we're seeing from the few scrimmage videos that we've seen that these guys have clearly worked on their game, and especially Randle, because we weren't able to watch him play in Summer League, but I think there's a concerted effort on his part to really hone in on his jump shot. We've only seen a few clips of him taking a three here or there and a mid-range jump shot, but from all accounts, it seems like he really added actual touch
to his shot. Okay, look, it's not like, you know, oh, he shoots and I'm like, wait, is that Randle or Kobe? It's still like, it's not the world's prettiest release, but it's a noticeable difference, right? Like the human eye can perceive this difference. Just watching him shoot it once or twice, you can see the added touch.
I mean, it's a lot different than the knuckleball shot rotation that he'd take last year. In fact, last year it was such a knuckleball shot that he actually shot better from three at times because I think the distance helped soften up his shot, you know? Yeah. So the fact that he can soften it up now with it's now curling off of his fingers instead of his palms, if that makes any sense. And you could see it in the few clips that we've seen. Obviously, it's just scrimmage videos. You don't want to read too much into that. But I like what I've seen from Randall so far. And then D'Angelo and Ingram just seem to be building off of their really good summer league campaign. And I think that's a good thing for them to just build off of that momentum. And, you know, we're seeing clips of them fooling around and playing around with each other. The chemistry is just building more and more, and this Team USA selecting couldn't have come at a better time for the Lakers' young core. And outside of that, we're hearing some great stuff from veterans like Kevin Durant. Obviously, I'm actually like, Kevin, what the hell are you saying, bro? He's like, oh, yeah, I look in a mirror and I see Brandon Ingram. You know, Kevin Durant is like heaping praise on Brandon Ingram, and it's great to hear. And I'm glad to see that, you know, he sees the promise. Obviously, I wouldn't go that far and say that he's the next Kevin Durant, like Kevin Durant is saying, but at least to know that a guy of Kevin Durant's caliber can see promise in 18-year-old Brandon Ingram right now, that's a great thing. And then I think today Greg Popovich talked about Julius Randle a little bit and said, you know, before this camp, I had no idea who this guy was. But as he's progressed in this camp, he's come up to me and talked to me, taken initiative to talk to me. And he's a really funny guy, got a good sense of humor. He's a hard worker, and he really listens to what I tell him. So all of those accounts are great to hear from the young guys. So I'm just glad that they're putting themselves out there and not just taking this opportunity for granted. Any other thoughts on Team USA stuff?
Not really.
So yeah, with that said, we're going to end it there. Kind of an everywhere sort of podcast, but in the summer, I'm guessing you guys will take anything, and this is that. This is that anything. We'll see what other content we can string up the rest of the summer. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Once again, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes, because like I said, the more you rate and review us, that's how many more morning after pics of shirtless Zubats and girlfriend wearing Lakers jersey you'll see on Twitter and Snapchat this upcoming year. And then Nance will do the same thing as well with his girlfriend. Or is he going to marry her soon? I don't know. We'll see.
Stay tuned. All
right. Stay tuned, everybody. This is riveting podcast news. All right, Tommy, I'll let you go.
Bye.
Pushing and pulling and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am
Napa Know How.
The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How. Napa Know-How.
A Napa guy knows the only way you'd give a freshly minted driver a brand new car is if he promises to never drive it. Instead, let him grind the gears and knock over the neighbor's mailbox in something a little more suited to his skill level. And with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa Know-How, he can safely drive something that's nearly as old as he is. It's not perfect, but it's perfect for him. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.